when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so very much for hanging on this second hour. From now on, the second, third hour is going to be incredible. It's going to be a dynamite. We have a guest on here. I'm bursting with pride and just so grateful to have him on. But before we get going, let you know, I got kind of blindsided by our guest the last 5 minutes. I know I don't have to tell you what I'm talking about. I got Dr. MacDonald on to talk about his two books. One of the great ones I tried to get him on for 2 years was The United States of Fear, How the United States Fell into a Mass Delusional Psychosis. I had no idea he was going to talk about how wonderful the Jews were. So, and rather than start a fight and argument the last 5 minutes of the show and be rude or combative to a guest that you try to get on, I've just given the disclaimer now. All you people that listen to me, you know exactly how I feel about Jews. And like I told our guest just a second ago before we came on there, I feel about Jews the same way Jesus Christ, my Savior Jesus Christ, felt about them. And if you read St. John 8:44, he tells them that they are their father, the devil. So they certainly did not come. I'm surprised that a very highly educated psychiatrist wouldn't know that. I mean, all you have to do is look around and see what the pure evil they're doing now. For instance, just in Palestine, that's the latest. But anyway, that's kind of like a little disclaimer. But all you people out there, you know how I feel. So I know you know exactly. And you know I'm not a rude guy to someone who, now on the street, that'd be a different matter. But anyway, we have somebody, a fabulous guest coming on right now. And his name is Gamar Rudolph, and he is a super intelligent fellow. I'll give you a brief bio of his education. He went to the Max Planck Institute in Germany. I wanted to say Frankfurt, but I don't know if it was Frankfurt, but I know it was. Go ahead, Dr. Gamar.
Stuttgart.
Stuttgart. That's right. Stuttgart, the place where I think Mercedes Benz are made.
That's right. And Porsches.
Yes. Oh, I didn't know they made Porsches there, but he went to the Max Planck Institute. It's one of the most famous institutes in the world. In case you don't know who Max Planck was, years and years and years and years ago, when I had my little dinky chemistry at the University of Memphis, I talked about Max Planck. I believe he talked about solid state particles and things like that. But anyway, Gerhard has, he was just within a couple of weeks of getting his doctorate in chemistry until these wonderful people, the Jews, well, I'll let him tell this story. Gerhard, how are you doing, my brother?
Well, it's Gamar. Well, never mind.
Give me Gamar. I'm sorry, Gamar. I'm sorry. I knew that. I don't know why. So I guess I'm getting old. Yes.
That may be.
Give us...
Yeah, as a background, first of all, there are more than 200 Max Planck Institutes all over the world. Most of them are in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, German-speaking countries. There's a few abroad. I was at one of them. I'm doing my PhD. It's the Max Planck Institute for Solid State Research. All these institutes are organized in a society called the Max Planck Society. Max Planck was a physicist who started quantum physics. If you can, he kick-started quantum physics. You can say he's the father of quantum physics. He wasn't the one who actually made the big breakthroughs that was Werner von Heisenberg and so forth, but he kind of started that early in the century. And that's the background of the namesake of that society. It used to be the Kaiser Wilhelm Society, named after the first Kaiser of the reunified Germany, but after the Second World War, they renamed that because monarchism was not in vogue anymore, so they had to go. Anyway, that's the background of that. Yeah, I was working on two PhD theses at the same time, the official one and the private one that I had assigned to myself. The official one was done in the ivory towers of the Max Planck Institute and was in the field of theoretical crystallography, solid state research, applied math. So very remote, not even going into details what I was doing there. That was my official PhD thesis. The other one was I was curious about German history and I read a lot and I stumbled across the Leuchter report on his research of the alleged gas chambers, execution gas chambers, presumably operated by the National Social Government at various wartime camps. Leuchter had been investigating those at Majdanek and Auschwitz. And he had a chemical component to it since I'm by university training a chemist. That was a topic that I got curious about and wanted to know more. So I got myself a copy of Leuchter's report in the original English edition, the one that David Irving, the British historian, had issued in 1989 or something. I don't remember. Anyway, that's the year I wrote it. I read it, and my English was pretty awful back then. I had trouble understanding it, so I translated it step by step to really wrap my head around it, what I was reading there, because it was so important. Anyway, curiosity piqued, I wrote a letter to the editor of a small journal saying, "Well, I'm not quite satisfied with that research Leuchter had done. That raises a lot of questions that need to be answered first before definitive answers can be given." And I listed the answer, the questions that need to be addressed, a number of them. That found interest among some lawyers who hired me to do that research to get the answers to those questions and then present them in an expert report in court. And I was then presented as an expert witness, however, always rejected, even threatened by judges, preventing me from testifying. That raised the attention of the Board of German Jews, and they intervened with the Max Planck Society demanding that I be sacked, which then happened. Then I was prosecuted for my expert report, was eventually sentenced to 4 months in prison and 14 months. Did I say four? I meant 14 months in prison.
14 months, correct?
And the German law that was passed in 1939 by Adolf Hitler says that if you are sentenced to for no, the law says you can, if you lack academic dignity, academic degrees can be withheld or withdrawn. And after the war, that law was not rescinded. It's still in the books. And nowadays, it is considered if you are sentenced to 1 year or more, that's exactly what they did to give me a little bit of more than 1 year, so to make sure that this applies, to a crime which you have committed by using, or rather abusing, your academic knowledge, then the academic degree you have abused for this purpose can be withdrawn and withheld. And so my application to be admitted to the final exam to get my PhD title was denied by the university, referring exactly to that Hitler law. And they gave me as alternative the option to withdraw the thesis or else it will be rejected. I withdrew the thesis then, planning on submitting it to some other university or at some other times when waters are calmer, which never happened. So my thesis is, I published it eventually privately. I never went through the rigmarole, and that's where that matter stands. Now, the long story of persecution that came subsequently, I don't want to touch upon it because I don't want to bore people, if that bores anyone. But yeah, so that's the short version of it.
Well, you're anything but boring, and you fit perfectly with Blood River Radio, that's for sure. We'll be going into a short break any minute, but in a few minutes we'll be bringing on Fred Leuchter. You mentioned him, and you mentioned you got a Leutsch report. I'm very proud to say Fred Leutsch sent me an autographed copy of his of the Leutsch report. Now, the when you were called as a witness for the defense of a plaintiff. Now, that was a man who was in Germany. Now, that didn't have anything to do with Ernst Zundel's trial, did it, Guillermo?
I was called to, I can't remember exactly, 7 or 8 cases, and one of them was actually Ernst Zundel, so later down the road. The first case was that of Udo Wallandi. The second was
we've got to go to a short break. Yamar, we'll be right back after this break. Excuse me for having interrupted you. Hang on, people, you're right back.
Attorney Jason Ruff, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing, and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Let me tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Dear Blood River Radio audience, what a huge transition, a contrast, compare and contrast between the first guest and this guest. That's just the way we do it on Blood River Radio. But I just ask our distinguished guest, Guillermo Rudolph, about the Ernst Zundel trial. And he did. He was later on in his journey of being an expert witness. He was called as an expert witness in the Ernst Zundel trial in Germany, because, you know, you may not know, but Ernst Zundel was shanghaied from the United States back to Canada, from Canada to Germany, and he was put on trial. He was persecuted in Germany, and it's Gemmer, and I was listening to one of Gemmer's speeches. He said, "There's really it's a waste of time to fight these people, these communists, these Jews in court, because they're going to do what they're going to do. Damn the evidence. The trial is just a show trial." But he did come testify in Ernst Zundel's trial in Germany. And, that's amazing. But you said you'd like to address that some more before we bring Fred Leutcher in to help us do with some questioning, Gemmer. Tell us a little bit about more of that. That's what you want to talk about.
Okay, we have two Zundel trials in Germany, just like we had two Zundel trials in Canada. He had an early one in 1991, 92. He did not go to jail for that. That was, I think, only a suspended term he got for that. And for a minor case of denial, I can't remember the details anymore. Was only summoned as a witness, so the details evade me right now. And it was in the early times. I wasn't too familiar with what's what and who's who in the revisionist movement back then. So I was just an expert witness coming from Max Planck Institute, from the outside, from the Ivy Towers of science, stepping into a big vessel of hot water. Anyway, a number of witnesses were called to testify. Dr. Faurisson was there. Fred Leuchter was even invited to testify there too. I don't know whether he was present. I can't remember. It was me, then a historian. We all were asked to address various subtopics on the Holocaust. For every specific area was an expert. There was a historian, an engineer, a chemist, and so forth. And the court, interestingly, rejected every single witness, saying that you have to be an expert in everything if you want to testify. The historian can't testify because he's not an engineer. The engineer can't testify because he's not a chemist. The chemist can't testify because he's not a historian. There was the argument of the court rejecting everyone, and it was kind of ludicrous. The defense really had lined up all the experts necessary to cover all the fields necessary, but the court was just giving us the runaround. And then at the end, not a single expert witness was allowed to testify, like it's customary in Germany. Now, even forced by law, you are not even allowed to file a motion to hear any evidence that or to introduce any evidence that could challenge the Orthodox dogma. That's against the law. That would be a crime already, and the lawyer would be prosecuted for that. But back then, in the early 90s, that was still possible without getting punished, even though you didn't get anywhere because all motions to file evidence was rejected. That was his first trial in Germany, and I was summoned to testify, but never did, as I never was allowed to testify. Later on, his second trial in Germany, when he got deported back from Canada, I got deported a little after he was deported. We both were in the United States in 2003, 2002, met a number of times, and he was arrested in early 2003, I think, and deported to Canada. I was arrested in 2005 in the US and deported directly to Germany. Canada,
Wow.
Ernst was then deported from Canada to Germany, I think a little bit prior to my deportation. He was on trial while I arrived in Germany. So he had the same judge that I was supposed to have, and it's really a hardcore political judge that sentences people really strictly and harshly. And because Ernst Zündel was dragging out his own trial by filing, having his lawyer file all kinds of motions, which all got rejected. It was a huge show trial. This chamber with that judge was so overwhelmed with that he could not try my case. My case was assigned to a different judge, who was a rather mild and understanding judge. He gave me a much better deal, so I got out mildly, thanks to Ernst Zündel blocking the other judge. And I ended up getting such a mild sentence, quote unquote, that I was able to return to the United States. That's why I can talk to you, because Ernst Zündel was taking the bullets in order for me to be able to return. He got such a harsh sentence that he was banned for lifetime from returning, because there's a law in the United States that says if you have two or more sentences with a cumulative sentence of 5 years or more. He had two verdicts in Germany, with the prior sentence being suspended, but the second one was 5 year, everything together 5 year or more. He could not ever return to the United States in his life. But I got the mild judge, got a mild sentence, lower than 5 years. Here I am. I can talk to you.
That
And
is amazing.
he ended up finishing his sentence, being sent to prison, Mannheim prison, the same time I was sent there, because he was dragging out his court much faster, longer than mine. We ended up being sentenced roughly around a similar time, terminally. He went through the revision process. I did not. I accepted my verdict because I didn't want to risk being sent back to a chamber with a harsh judge and getting a harsher sentence. So I accepted my punishment, whereas he filed for revision. And after that process, he came to prison, the same prison as I, the same wing, the same area. We sat together in prison. We spent a month together, talking all day long about everything that you can talk about our minds. So two people, similar mindset, similar background, similar tragic fate. He has a harsher one, had a harsher one than me, though. And he acted like a shield, unknowingly, but as a shield to help me get a milder sentence and come back. Yeah, we stood together under the shower naked, so we knew each other under any circumstances of life, of the biggest stressful situation in prison. We went through this hell together. And when he came out, I was out already for a while. We met again. We talked about our plans for the future. I laid out to him, I will be eventually coming back to the United States, which I managed to. And here we are. Of course, we know he passed away, and he was happy to give me whatever legacy he could hand over in electronic files. I couldn't take physical objects, but whatever he had, he gave it to me, and I took it along. Whatever was left after his ours, and he lost a lot. And that's where we are here.
Wow. You know, so just for clarification, you had to do 14 months in a German prison, Gamora?
14 months was the sentence for my expert report that I got back in 1995. Second time when I was deported in 2005, I was sentenced to another 30 months. So it's made a total of 44 accumulated, but still underneath the bar of 5 years, which is 60 months. So I spent a total of 44 months in prison, whereas Ernst, of course, had got his 5 years plus the 2 years they kept him in solitary confinement in Canada. That was not recognized as time spent. It should have been. That was just cruel. They said it had nothing to do with his quote-unquote Holocaust denial. Of course, it had everything to do with it. It was just a mean way for this harsh judge to make matters worse for Ernst.
That's about, you know, like I said, I've read his, I'm almost through with his book, Letters from the Prisoner from cell number seven, when he was in jail. And the man, I've never read about anyone, I've never heard of anyone as tough-minded as Ernst Zundel was. Well, you know, we'll be going to a break in just a minute. When we come back from that break, we'll bring in Ernst Zundel. We'll bring in Fred Leutcher. You've mentioned Fred Leutcher. You said you read hit the Leutcher Report. He, like you, he was a chemist. And I noticed, and doing a little bit of research about you, you got into this this chemical, this Prussian blue. You know, I didn't know that Zyklon B was sodium cyanide, potassium cyanide. I had no idea that those were two, one of the same. Oh, hydrogen cyanide. Okay. Hey, I got almost in the same football field, but not nowhere close to the goal line. But and you were talking about that was, and that the fact that this chemical has the ability to completely penetrate even rock, stone, brick. People listening, Blood River Radio audience, that is a key component, a key factor. A scientific fact that had all the bearing in the world on people I know, like Fred Leutcher, coming to the conclusion that the Holocaust was bunk, and also I think to the same man as Gamar. He, in fact, I think Gamar did a paper in one of his theses dealing with this Prussian blue, this. Cyanide compound. Is that true, Gilmore? And we'll get into that. I'll tell people why in just a few minutes, why I'm dwelling
my on... Expert report, yeah, my expert report was published as a standalone publication, and I've expanded over the years with more research and more results that we've had on various bases. So it's a 400-some-odd page book now.
Well, you know... like I say, I'm really excited to get. Fred Leutcher knows a lot more about chemistry, and of course you do too, than I could ever hope to know. And Fred has been working with Ernst Zundel going all the way back to the 80s. So he has a tremendous amount of knowledge. He's in all the books. That's why I wanted to get him on to question you some, to you two get together and talk. I'm running slightly behind schedule. We'll be bringing in Paul Fromm later, because Paul Fromm helped Ernst Zundel from the get-go, from the very start of his troubles all the way to the end. So people, hold on. We'll be coming right back. And if we come back, we're going to bring in the one and only Fred Leutcher. Be right back.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jen Gelber. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell told NBC's Meet the Press that he doesn't believe presidents should have absolute immunity for actions taken while in office. This comes as the Supreme Court heard arguments related to former President Trump on Thursday. McConnell reiterated his stance, which he made after voting to acquit Trump following the 2021 Capitol riot, suggesting that the former president could be held accountable by the justice system. He emphasized that it would ultimately be up to the Supreme Court to decide. A Florida Republican is no fan of President Biden's proposed tax plan. USA's Tim Berg has the details.
President Joe Biden is proposing an aggressive tax plan that could affect millions across the country after promising not to hurt the middle class financially. Speaking on Fox Business, Florida Republican Congressman Byron Donalds says former President Trump's policies should be restored.
Trump's tax policy has worked out for all of America. The federal government has raised more tax revenue since Trump's tax policy has been in place. And last but not least, why would we listen to the master of disaster, Joe Biden, about raising taxes when his own son avoided paying taxes?
It's now illegal to sell weight loss and muscle building supplements to minors in New York, the first state in the country to enact the law. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration oversees the market for these items, but it doesn't test products before they're sold. State lawmakers in Massachusetts are now considering passing a similar law. New York's law allows the state to fine businesses who sell kids diet pills or supplements that promote themselves as helping build muscle or burn fat. Protein supplements and shakes are exempt unless they contain another weight loss or muscle building ingredient. I'm Jen Gelber, USA News.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare...
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Dear Blood River Radio family, you know I'm pretty much an old Southern redneck, so I'm going to do the best I can to ask these two gentlemen, highly educated, very, very intelligent, high IQs. I'm going to do the best I can to try to paint a picture to you people out there how they both came to the conclusions. One of the big facts in the so-called death camps, supposed death camps, that played a part in both of these gentlemen deciding that the death camps could not have possibly, the alleged death camps could not have possibly operated with this chemical called Cyclone B, which is our guest Gemars told me the best, most correct. Pronunciation for it is ion blue. This chemical played a major role in them determining that the death camps were a complete farce. I think both the gentlemen's, Gemar and Fred's explanations are going to be pretty close, but I guess I will start. I know, Gemar, I guess I'll start with you briefly if you can. Tell our listeners of Blood River Radio how this chemical played a part. You might almost say it's an indicator that was missing at the so-called alleged death camp. So go ahead, Gemar. Tell us about the best you can. Tell how that helped sway your mind into convincing you that the death camp was false. So go ahead, Gemar.
All right, a few corrections here, and I apologize if I sound like a stickler for my niche here, but the lethal component used at Auschwitz, according to the Orthodox narrative, was hydrogen cyanide. That is still to this day being sold in a certain way of packaging it under the trade name Zyklon B. Zyklon is the image of a zyklon going into a disinfestation chamber and eradicating all the bugs in there. So that's why the German company that invented it called it Zyklon, because it's zykloning to death, like a tornado, all the bugs. But the active ingredient is hydrogen cyanide. Now, this active ingredient, hydrogen cyanide, was used in all German camps, even in prisoner of war camps, in military barracks, in all kinds of civilian enterprises, because it's a disinfestant, it is a insecticide. Before the invention of more sophisticated or more disastrous ones, depending on how you look at it, like DDT. DDT replaced Zyklon B briefly at the end of the Second World War. This was applied pretty much everywhere to fight lice, fleas, and other vermin. It is said to have been used to kill human beings in a number of camps, not all death camps, so we have to distinguish here. The two most prominent ones where the Zyklon B is said to have been used to kill human beings rather than bugs are Majdanek and Auschwitz. And Fred has investigated both. He was in both places. I was only at Auschwitz. I never went to Majdanek, never had the opportunity to do so. The other death camps that are claimed to have been murder factories, like Chano, Sobibor, Belzec, and Treblinka, are said to have used completely different agents of death that I have myself not really done any investigations about. Some of it is also said to have been used at Majdanek, that is bottled carbon monoxide. This is also just a claim. Now, coming back to the hydrogen cyanide in the form of Zyklon B has numerous features which make it not very suitable to mass murder people with. First of all, because it releases its poison slowly. So if you want to make a swift execution, as is claimed, doing that with Cyclin B is a little bit of a technical challenge. Now, if you have the right apparatus, the right technical setup, you may be able to achieve that. But this is not part of the narrative that we're told. The narrative is that the Cyclin B was just dumped in to whatever location is claimed. So this makes it all a little bit strange to behold, knowing that the Germans had the technology to do much better than this. That being said, hydrogen cyanide is a chemical that reacts not just with the iron in your blood, but it also reacts with iron that it finds anywhere. So if it reacts with the iron in your blood, it gets transported through your bloodstream and attaches itself to some structures in the cells of your body and blocks your metabolism, your oxygen metabolism. And so it starves your cells to death. That's how it kills. That's how it kills humans, warm-blooded as well as cold-blooded animals. It works pretty much on almost all animals. It doesn't work on bacteria, though. So that's why it's not a disinfectant. It doesn't kill bacteria. It kills higher life forms, insects and mammals. It also reacts with iron in the inorganic world, meaning, in this case, building material, walls.
Yes.
We're talking stucco, mortar, plaster, and even bricks to some degree, if it is chemically or physically activated, the iron in there.
Materials so you have, that you would find in the death camp. That those materials you're talking about, that this chemical would react with inorganic materials as well as it would organic, like organic
and
human.
Any construction material has a finite amount, a small amount of rust in it. That comes
for instance,
just
the walls
in
the death camp. The walls in an alleged gas chamber. I got you.
Yeah, the alleged homicidal gas chambers. And, of course, you have the actual disinfestation gas chambers that existed, no doubt, where the Cyclin B, nobody contends this, was used. At Birkenau, we have mainly two structures where Cyclin B was used in copious amounts. And they were built out of brick and mortar like any other building would have been built. And so were the structures that are said to have served as homicidal gas chambers, different structures, crematoria, and certain rooms in them. They were built of brick and mortar as well, different kind of mortar because some of them were underground. They had to be built to be resistant against groundwater, so that was a little bit of a different composition, harder cement mortar rather than lime mortar as they used for the disinfestation chambers. All this has an impact on how things react. But as a matter of fact, the basic line here is you have rust. Anything that makes sand not perfectly white but a little bit ochreish, that is rust. We all know how rust looks like. That's where the color ochre comes from in sand. It is also part of cement that you put into the mortar. Cement, normal cement that you buy at the store has 1, 2, sometimes 3% of rust. Nothing bad about it. It's just because our planet is an iron planet. The half of the mass of planet Earth is pretty much iron. On the surface, not so much. The deeper you dig, the more
That's
iron
a great
you find.
Point. That's a critical
but,
point you just made.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
that's a critical point.
Iron everywhere. If you dig up a little bit of mud in the neighborhood,
Hello? Do we?
No.
We're having a little trouble.
You will find small amounts of rust. It's just everywhere. That's just the mother of. So you find sometimes you have iron in it. Rust reacts with hydrogen cyanide.
I got you. See, yes. Oh, I think. Oh, Lizzie, if you will call, when you get through doing what you're doing, call Paul Fromm and tell him we're running behind schedule. I'll bring him in a little later. So, what happened to Gerhardt?
He tried to transmission is breaking up, so.
Okay, I tell you what, Fred. If we get Gev, can we get Fred? Can we get Gemar back? Step in and tell the people why this Ion Blue is so critical. That's such a critical factor. You notice he said that our planet is an ion planet. You can't keep rust. You can't keep iron out of this building materials, et cetera, et cetera. And this chemical turns into a blue. So if you will, Fred, can we chip in and kind of add we're going to a break. People, hang on to your seats. We're going to a break. We just got Gemar back. We lost him there for a minute. But we'll be right back and deal with this complex problem, this complex subject. Be right back, folks.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
Dear Blood River Radio family, forgive me if I may seem like a little off balance, but this is kind of tough to schedule. I wanted to kind of tough to get around this complex subject. Concepts of chemistry. I'd like to reiterate that this chemical that we're talking about, that was supposedly used to kill human beings. Had it been used, the traces would remain there probably for 100 years or more, because you cannot, once that chemical that we're talking about, the ion blue, the Prussian blue, whatever, it permeates all these building materials. You just heard our scientist, Gemar Rudolph, testify to that. Fred Reutcher is a chemical engineer. He's also testified to that fact, so I'm going to shut up. I'll shut up since Fred's been hanging so long. Fred, if you will, chime in and pick up and join Gemar in what he's talking about and get this work this Prussian blue in there that should have been at the site of these death camps but was not, but it was missing. And correct me if I'm wrong. Go ahead, Fred.
Prussian blue makes an almost permanent bond with iron when it comes in contact with it. It's been used for thousands of years for dyes They use it in paints. They use it in all kinds of things where they want a nice blue color. So it's been around for a long time. The situation here is that as Gamma said, our planet is mostly iron. So we've got iron in the water. We've got iron in the sand and materials that we make mortar and cement with. So it's going to show up when it's used. And particularly Poland had a heavy concentration of iron in the water that they use. And that's what it does when we breathe it in the gas chamber. When somebody is breathing it, it makes a permanent bond with the hemoglobin, which is iron-based in the blood. And what it does is it damages the hemoglobin so that it will never pick up oxygen again. And it destroys the blood so that since it will no longer pick up oxygen, the individual that breathes the hydrogen cyanide gas winds up suffocating from the inside out. It's a terrible way to die. It's almost inconceivable. But at any rate, the Germans didn't have that much of it. Toward the end of the war, they needed to spend their money on other things. They didn't even do enough. They didn't even use the hydrogen cyanide gas or Zyklon B enough to kill vermin and things in the barracks and in the buildings because they just didn't have the money. And as a result, we didn't find any in the buildings. The only place we found the concentrations were in the delousing chamber. They used it. And the problem is that it could not have been used for execution purposes because at the times that they say the execution took place, we have to have large amounts of hydrogen cyanide gas to kill all these people in an 8 or 10 minute time period. And that didn't happen. What apparently did happen is the people that wanted to talk about and invent the gas chamber story, they listened to what was done in the United States, and they said, the United States killed people in 10 minutes, so therefore we can kill people in 10 minutes. But that's not so, because we use very large, heavy concentrations of it. And what they use in the pesticide is they use a small amount because they're only killing vermin and things. Now, they say that it takes more gas to kill the vermin than it does to kill people, but that's not the case. We have to use heavy concentrations because we do it in such a short time period, and that was not possible in Germany. Plus, the facilities that were there, none of them were designed for introduction of gas, for the evacuation of the gas after the execution. They claim that they threw in gas, the pellets of hydrogen cyanide. Now, the Zyklon B was either chalk pellets, seashells, if you will, that absorbed the gas when they made it, and they just threw it in on the floor. And the discoids were paper. It was absorbed in the paper. But the problem is you need heat to bring it out. In order to sublimate the gas, you've got to heat it over 78 degrees Fahrenheit. And that didn't happen. They were using this stuff in the cold Polish winter in buildings that weren't heated. So that if you threw the hydrogen cyanide pellet on the floor, it would just lay there and nothing would happen. So, as I say, they didn't have the facilities for heating it. In the areas where they had the delousing chamber, they had what's called a stove, and they put the discoid or the pellets in a basket inside the stove. Hot air was blown over it, came out and went through a pipe into the area where they were doing the disinfecting of the lice on the clothing. But they didn't have any of this in the so-called gas chambers because they weren't gas chambers. All they were morgues. So, yeah, they had none of the facilities needed, and they looked at the United States and they found out how we did it, and they say that the SS did it the same way. But the SS, they didn't have the equipment, they didn't have the amount of Cyclone B that they would have needed to do the job in the first place. And on top of that, the Germans would have, if they were going to execute people on a mass level, they would have figured out a much faster way to do it. Remember, they were using microwave ovens to kill the lice on clothing back in 1943 and 1944, and we didn't discover a use for microwave until after World War II, when somebody working at Raytheon melted his Hershey bar when he crossed a radar beam. So, I mean, they were well ahead of the United States in terms of the use of the microwave. So, they would have certainly, if they were going to execute people in large quantities, they would have certainly figured out a better way than the stupid approach that they used for describing the Holocaust.
You know, that's excellent, Fred. Bouncing back to Gemar, one of the arguments that the prosecutors made, the people that claimed that there were death camps, and when they were asked, well, why was this material, this bluish color material, why was it missing? Why was it not there at the so-called death camps? And they said because it was such a permanent material. And I think Gemar said that they said their weak excuse was, well, over the period 10 or 15 years, the wind and the rain would have washed it away. So if you will, pick up from there, Gemar, would the wind and rain wash this blue coloring away? Go ahead, Gemar.
Yes, I'm a little bit in the pickle here. Fred Lewister has made a number of statements that I would have to disagree with. It shows some misconceptions, and I don't want to be later attacked saying I haven't said anything about this. But I also don't want to turn that into a fight between the two of us about details. If the reader is interested in the details, his report has been republished by Castle Publishers and not by Armreg. You can actually look up this report with my comments and my corrections and my confirmations with a lot of footnotes and sources on the website holocausthandbooks.com, free of charge. The whole PDF file can be accessed, downloaded there, and you can also find other research there. Now, having said this, not wanting to go into the extreme details, the issue here is multifold, and this is one of the things that I started out with. I didn't want to take Fred's research that he had published in his research report as face value, because I had a number of questions that I think should have been addressed before far-reaching conclusions could be made. I have addressed those in my expert report, which, by the way, you can find on that website as well. That's volume 2 of the Holocaust Handbook series. Fred's report with my comments is volume 16. The question of how can you explain that you find huge amount of iron blue in the walls of the disinfestation chambers, the Zyklon B disinfestation chambers, and I say in the walls, not on the walls. You can see on the walls blue patches. This is the exterior optical confirmation that this chemical has formed. Now you find it inside the wall. You take samples from the mortar from inside the wall, from the middle of it. It's still in there. It's still paint, dyeing it blue. So we have it throughout the wall, throughout the mortar. Why do we find it in huge masses in the disinfestation chamber, and we find nothing reproducible in the alleged homicidal gas chambers? There are many factors playing in: time, concentration, humidity, chemical composition. It is a complex issue which I have addressed, and you can't just say that is because of this reason or that. It's a very complex issue.
We have to go to a break. We have to go to these breaks. They're computer controlled. We'll be right back after this break. We're transitioning to the third hour, Gemar and Fred. So hang on, guys. Be right back. We're going to bring in Paul Fromm. Hang on a second. Break.